Hello, everybody. This is Flurries and Films. This week, we're doing Spotlight.
Hit the music.
I am Michael Flaherty.
And I'm Colleen Flaherty.
This
is Flaherty's on Films, a coolly cool podcast where we talk about super fun films. Michael, what are we talking about this week and what is it about?
Just delightful romps. Is this a comedy or a drama? We'll find out. The Spotlight, the true story of how the Boston Globe uncovered the massive scandal of child molestation and cover up within the local Catholic archdiocese. Is that how you say that?
Archdiocese.
What did I say?
Sure.
Shaking the entire Catholic Church to its core. Colleen.
Michael. Oh,
yes. Yeah, you go first. Tell me if you've seen this movie and if you like it.
I've seen this movie before. I think it's actually one of my favorite films.
Whoa, top five?
Top 10. I very much like it. Makes me feel a lot of feelings, but we will talk about that. Michael, have you seen this film?
I have not seen this before. This is my first viewing. I thought it was okay. I feel like the source material is really interesting. And I feel like the actors did a super good job acting. I do think the movie is kind of bland. It's kind of like, you know, the movie Social Network? I'm trying to think of other movies that are like based on true stories. And that's just the first one I thought of. Like, sure. Social Network, I would think of, in my mind, that's a movie first, and then it's like, oh, you know, those are actually real events. Whereas this movie is like, it's really just taking the real events and just, like, putting it pretty directly, and there's not a lot, like, of new, I don't know. We could talk about it later, but...
I agree with that, yeah. But I think that I'm kind of a... nerd about some things about this movie.
You have a lot of personal reasons for liking it because you're a writer and you work in politics.
Well, I was a journalist as well. But we'll talk more about that. Anyway, let's go to our first segment.
Bam.
Time for Sam. The part of the show where Sam comes on and tells some hilarious facts about this great movie. Sam, take it away.
Sam, we will put in the clown horn sound effects in post. So.
Oh, where the fuck is your slide whistle?
I actually found that today when I was cleaning up.
I mean, could you have like the fake audience applause? That'd be great.
Totally. Woo, woo, woo. I just clapped from now, so that'll be speed.
It'll be added in. No, I totally get it.
Yeah, we'll add it. Just imagine that's a whole crowd.
In 2013, Tom MacArthur.
Sorry,
was
one more thing. I will also get the Seinfeld. Da-doom, da-doom, da-doom,
I love it.
When you do a fact.
In 2013, Tom MacArthur. Carthy was approached with the idea of writing a screenplay based on the 2002 Boston Globe investigation of the abuse hidden in the Catholic Church. Initially, he wanted to pass. Quote, I passed, turned down the film the first time. That's probably some indication of how intimidating it was. But I think, as always, with any big assignment, once you get over the initial shock and the awe of how much material there was to cover, you start digging into the material and become really fascinated by and engaged with it. And we did. And yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was exciting work. It was really interesting work, perusing through details of not just the investigation, but its findings, and trying to determine what was the most helpful in telling our story. I think having two brains on it was somewhat helpful too, because we could talk through it a lot. So it wasn't just sitting alone in a room and jotting notes. We were dialoguing a lot about it. So MacArthur would work with Josh Singer to write the screenplay. And in June 2013, it was finished. They would originally get a deal with DreamWorks, but with the disappointing box office performance of Singer's film, The Fifth Estate, that was the one with Julian... Assange?
Assange?
That one. DreamWorks.
I heard it was not very good.
Yeah. So he wrote that movie and it's bombed. So DreamWorks would drop this project. Although they couldn't get another studio interested, at the end of the year, they were featured on the 2013 Blacklist. For those who don't know, the Blacklist is a list that comes out every year of like the most interesting and really unique stories or screenplays that are circling around that no one's picked up yet.
That's so. A weird term for that. It's weird.
Yep. A lot of really good movies have come from the Blacklist, so it's a good list to be on, I guess.
Is it like an homage to the communist witch hunt era?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering that too.
But anyway, sorry.
Finally, the script would find its home with Open Road Films. It was such a compelling script that Mark Ruffalo signed on immediately after reading it. Michael Keaton was planning on taking a break from acting, but also immediately signed on after finishing the script. Once all the cast was assembled, they would have the actors meet with their counterparts to learn how to become them. For the role of Walter Robinson, Keaton was most nervous about learning a Bostonian accent. He was incredibly grateful when he saw a recording of Robinson and realized that his accent wasn't very strong. Robinson would say of Keaton's portrayal, "It was like watching yourself in a mirror, yet you have no control of the mirror image." He had so many quotes. I have one more. "My persona has been hijacked. If Michael Keaton robbed a bank, the police would quickly have me in handcuffs."
That's fun.
It wasn't just Keaton who dived into his role. Mark Ruffalo went over to Michael Resendiz.
You know what's a weird thing about this movie? I really like it. I've seen it many times. I always forget what the characters' names are, except for Michael Keaton, because they say Robbie like 80 times. That's all I know.
They say Mark Ruffalo's name a lot, but I'm also...
They do say it a lot. They say everybody's name a lot, Michael, and for some reason, I just don't follow it. Like, I forget what people's names are.
I feel like say his last name specifically a lot, but I don't remember.
And yeah,
Resendiz? I don't know.
Resendiz? Perfect.
Something like that.
So he went over to Michael Resendiz's house and immediately pulled out a recorder and started asking personal questions. Resendiz said at first he was very uncomfortable with all the personal questions, and then he realized that this must be how the people he interviews feels.
Aww.
Rachel McAdams went into such details to get into the mind of Sasha Pfeiffer that she inquired even how short she kept her nails and her favorite size of Post-it to use.
That's probably not necessary.
And it wasn't just the people and plot that were accurate. A big set was built to depict the Boston Globe offices at that time. Apparently, it was so accurate that when the real reporters came onto the set, they all gravitated to their desks and rearranged the items to how they had had it.
Cool. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Feel me? These facts are so lame, guys. I'm really sorry.
Sam, remember the sound effects that are going to be in, for sure.
Oh, thank you. That makes it so much better. Filming would happen from September through October of 2014, and it was split between Boston and Ontario. Resendiz was on set, and Ruffalo would ask him to recite his lines of dialogue during breaks in filming to make sure he said it the same way.
Okay.
Not all the reporters were excited to be Hollywoodized. Pfeiffer admitted she was convinced she would watch the finished film and they would include a sex scene to make it more interesting.
Oh, no.
Quote, "They did tell me that as a routine part of the process, they send out the script for notes, and one returned saying this movie could use a bit of romance. What about an affair between McAdams and Ruffalo?"
I probably would have.
So I wasn't paranoid. It was on the table, but luckily the director and screenwriter felt it would diminish the story. I think we got lucky.
Totally. I would have wrote that note for sure.
What if these two attractive people bang?
That would be like...
You think of that?
They're like, well, how does that fit into the script? Like, I didn't read it. that's what I thought. Just literally my first thought. I'll read
bad
it.
Bad ideas and brainstorming, guys.
I saw Ruffalo. I saw McAdams.
So how do we get Ruffalo's shirt off if he's not having sex with McAdams?
He's so frustrated at the courthouse because he can't get the documents. He has to take his shirt off.
So the hard part of researching this film is it's a pretty accurate film, so there isn't too much exciting drama to talk about. But There were a couple interesting things about why this movie is considered unique that I thought I would bring up. So a lot of people, when they think of this movie, they compare it to All the President's Men, which makes sense. True story, journalists figuring out the whole plot. And although he was inspired by All the President's Men, the real kind of direction that the director went in was after Sidney Lumet, who directed Network and 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, sure.
So Spotlight didn't have like the dramatic car chases or sources that are half hidden in shadows, kind of like All the President's Men did. It was more like seriously character driven. So
like Mikey would have liked that car chase.
Oh, I would have loved it for sure. If they were having sex in a car chase, God, would have stood out.
So another quote. Sorry, these people are like really good writers because, you know, they're writers. Yeah. So I really liked their quotes. So you get a lot of them today. So to quote Resendez, the genius of the movie is that it somehow makes exciting the drudgery of investigative reporting. There's that scene in the movie where we were building that church database of predator priests. They took 3 grueling weeks, and I don't think our eyesight ever really recovered. It was incredibly tedious and boring. But there in the movie, with that wonderful score cutting back and forth between Sasha, Robbie, myself, and Matt Carroll, it seems riveting.
Cool.
So then the other big thing that this movie did that was kind of different for its time is that it has an ensemble cast. So no actor is considered the lead.
Really? Which, I thought it was Michael Keaton.
No. Very deliberately, no actor was supposed to be the lead, I should say.
That's what they tried to do.
So to quote Josh Singer, who's one of the writers, Tom made a bold decision to keep 6 characters alive with individual arcs and moments. And he's just so good at small moments, so you don't write over the top, he says. Mike and Sasha's characters were always prominent, and we'd do a draft where we'd focus on Robbie and make sure we got that arc right. And then we'd have Martin Baron, this moral and ethical national treasure who holds the powerful accountable. Did we give him enough? And then we lure guys like John Slattery and Brian D'Arcy James, and their characters need enough meat on that bones. We did rewrites up until production, and it became a question of whether we could get the financing for this because we felt like we had something really special. So that's kind of like the 2 big things. Kind of just the basic story of characters, and then the fact that every character had
a lot going on. Yeah.
The movie would premiere in November 25th, 2015. It had already premiered at a film festival. I think it was the Venice Festival. And apparently right after, it had like a standing ovation. It was just massive applause. People loved it. So it premiered in the United States on November 25th, 2015, and would make $98.3 million in the box office worldwide with a budget of $20 million. Although the film never mentions it, the Boston Globe would win the 2003 Pulitzer Prize in Public Service for the Spotlight Reporting Team's article. It says the prize is for its courage, comprehensive coverage of sexual abuse by priests in an effort that pure secrecy stirred local, national, and international reaction and produced changes in the Roman Catholic Church.
Nice. Yeah, that's really good.
This film is on an AFI list. It is on the top 10 lists of 2015.
Ooh.
Other films that year, The Big Short.
I like that movie.
Inside Out, Mad Max Fury Road, Room, Straight Outta Compton, and Star Wars The Force Awakens.
It's definitely,
that's a good year.
It's definitely number one on my list of movies that sound like they're musicals.
There you go.
Disappointing watch that would be.
That's almost as bad as when we went to that bar called Off Broadway because we thought it would be a Broadway themed bar, and then
that
it was just
so disappointing. But it's just off the street Broadway. Fuck you, Off Broadway. You can be 2 things. Jesus.
So this film would go to the Oscars, and your question of the week is: how many films was it, or how many awards was it nominated for? Not win, nominated.
10.
4.
6.
Oh, you win.
Yay.
It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for Ruffalo. He refused to be Best Lead Actor, because once again, ensemble. Best Supporting Actress for McAdams, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Film Editing. It would win Best Picture and Best Original Screenplay. And my final fact for you today is that this film would be the second digitally captured motion picture to win the Best Picture Oscar Award.
Cool,
very cool. Thank you
really
so much.
Really stretching for things that make it worthy of being on this list.
And that was...
Bam.
Time for Sam. That was some cool, cool facts. Why don't we go to our next segment, a little thing we like to call Critics Corner.
What is this segment?
It's where we hear what the critics have to say about this film, Spotlight.
Guess it's kind of self-explanatory with the title.
It is a bit, right?
Okay.
Spotlight manages the seemingly impossible task of wooing journalists with authenticity while still elevating reporters to hero status as they battle a formidable and corrupt institution with righteous determination. Says Zach Schofield of Newsweek.
That sounded like a Schofield when I heard it.
Sure.
This next
one. Are you drumming or something?
What? No, just nodding.
That's that's something else.
This next one is by Robert J. Micco, and he writes for Amazon reviews. It was liberal Hollywood reminding everyone how bad the Catholic Church is. Well, this was real. That was the real purpose. Too bad. Subject matter killed great acting. I mean,
I'm okay with that. Actually,
yeah, all right.
How rare is this? A true story so much worth the telling that it needs no embellishment, no sideshow, says David Sexton of the London Evening Standard. I gotta say, so like these critics who are writing about this movie, they're all reporters, so there's probably an element there where they're like, yes, the printed word will save us all. Thank you for making this movie about it.
Move over, Iron Man. This next one is by Laidsle, and they write for Amazon. The effect of watching this movie was not unlike that which might be experienced after having swallowed a bottle of Ambien. So they didn't like it, sounds like.
They did not care for it.
No.
This is Chris McCoy of the Memphis Flyer. For journalists and people who care about democracy and the value of open society, Spotlight is a masterclass on how things should be done.
Is Memphis Flyer, is that like a paper?
I assume.
That's a cool name. This last one is from the publication Amazon Reviews, and this is by Maggie Board. Here's the review. Not into men talking about little boys and priests. Sorry.
Not forgiven, Maggie.
Yeah, all right. Clean, do you want to talk about your favorite part or least favorite part of the film?
Yeah, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about the film.
Sure.
In general. So the summary is going to be a little shorter this week because, you know, this we'll get into why. But so when I saw this movie the first time, I was really blown away by it. I just thought.
When did you do this? When did this movie come out?
I think I saw it in theaters. So I think I saw it in 2015. And I always liked All the President's Men. I think this is a better film. And I mean, I like a lot of the drudgery of it, right? I like how it really accurately depicts reporting. And okay, I am getting somewhere. Just trust me. But I have a weird opinion about one of my favorite movies, Spotlight. I don't think it should have won Best Picture.
Because
I feel like it won Best Picture because the subject matter was so good and important. Not because the film is so good.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's like, exactly my opinion.
Everybody talks about how good the acting is. And I think that the acting is like they're just living it. They're just accessories to this amazing story. I never saw any of their performances that's so good. And if sometimes I get sidetracked by it. Because I actually like the reporting in it better. I don't care about Mark Ruffalo's like crisis of faith. Like I was bored at that point.
Yeah, it's boring. I was thinking about the acting of the survivors.
Oh, that was actually, that's one of my favorite parts. I was talking about the main cast. And you know, I love me some Michael Keaton. I think he's great. I thought he was the best part of that one Spider-Man film. He's very good in that.
That had some good humor. That had other aspects.
Nope. Just Michael Keaton.
Sorry. I don't know why I just spoke some wrong shit.
So I don't really have any criticisms personally about the film, but I just think it tells a very specific story pretty well and faithfully. And I don't think that deserves to be, like, I don't know if that's better than Mad Max Fury Road, right? Like, that was just a, like, crazy different thing in cinema that we saw. Spotlight was just a well-told story. And I feel weird saying that because that's my favorite kind of movie. But I also don't know shit about movies. So that's kind of my least favorite part if I had to stretch for one.
Yeah, that's kind of my least favorite part. Like, you say it's a good story, and I agree, but it's not like a good story like a piece of fiction is a good story. It's a good story like a newspaper story. Like, just the things that happened were interesting, and these people just did a hard thing. But it's not like... Like, I keep thinking of the character that Rachel McAdams plays. Rachel McAdams, who's, like, a really good... She's an amazing actress. One of the best.
Is she amazing? One of the best?
Of acting? Yeah, I think so. Okay. But in this movie, she's just, like, a person who does her job. And it's, like, she doesn't have, like, goals or motive. Like, she just does her job, and that's who she is.
She's sad about her grandma being Catholic.
And I did see, like... an interview with her and the journalist she was playing, and she's like, I would call her up, I'd ask her what color bag she had. Like, I don't know, none of that matters.
I mean, it all felt very authentic. They all felt like real people. So maybe that's kind of what the product of that was, that it wasn't distracting in any way because it was so authentic.
Yeah. It's like, what I'm going to say is, it's just, I think this movie, I'm not really going to remember it. I barely remember All the President's Men. I don't really remember anything. And I'm probably not going to remember anything about this because it's just kind of like, as I already said, just the events of this story just sort of happening. And they did it authentically. And I actually really like how that those journalists do like this movie. And they're like, yeah, that's really how it was. And there's definitely some value to the authenticity of it all. Mm-hmm. You know, me, like, I say it ironically, but also kind of truthful, that I want a movie with sex and explosions. But I do, you know, and it's like...
Sure.
And that's just not what this movie is. And it's like, fine. But it's just not what
I'm
into.
Can I ask you a totally out of left field question?
Please.
Do you have any feelings about being Catholic?
No, not at all.
So, for those who don't know,
I would never describe myself as Catholic.
Michael and I did grow up going to church every Sunday. We are Catholic. Like, I mean, no, we were. I haven't been in a while. I think I had some feelings about it. Because let's talk about it for a second.
Sure.
This movie makes me, I guess another, maybe it's another least favorite part, that this movie makes me feel too many things. I'm mad. It reminds me, okay. So our father, he's a guy who feels bad about...
No, you're not talking
Catholic.
About the Lord.
Not the Lord.
Not
our father,
the father,
our
capital
daddy.
F. Yeah, our daddy.
Mike.
God, I'll hate that. I love it. Yeah, I love that.
He, you know, he sort of wrestles with guilt of not being Catholic anymore. Or he'll talk to us about how the new Pope is so cool. He barely even hates gay people. Dad has not actually said that, but...
No, our daddy would
never
say that.
That's how people talk about the new Pope. And I'm like... I have this weird opinion that if you've been systematically abusing children for most of the history of your institution, you get to just not exist anymore and I don't fucking care. Like, isn't that okay?
Yeah, I mean, we're in the territory of just talking about this real story, and it is fucking crazy.
So, and at the end, they do this awful thing where they listed all the places that have had huge scandals. One of them is Milwaukee, Wisconsin. There was one priest who worked at a school for deaf boys, and he molested 200 boys that we know of.
Jeez.
And then there were like 80 priests that they found. There were thousands of people who've been abused in the Milwaukee Archdiocese. It's fucking awful.
It is. What is an archdiocese?
So it's just like, think about it like a county. So a lot of little towns in your county, those are the churches.
Those are the dioceses.
Yeah, the archdiocese is like, oh, I see all your dioceses.
Oh, I see him.
So yeah, I think I was a pretty lapsed Catholic before this, but now I'm kind of anti-Catholic.
You were Catholic before you saw the film.
No. I was a lapsed, like, I didn't really have any feelings about it.
Oh, I see.
Because spoiler, I'm like an atheist, but now I actually have really negative feelings about the Catholic Church. Not, I guess I didn't know about this before I saw the movie in 2015, but I did not know the depths of it until I saw this movie, which is awful because they did the reporting in 2002. I just, you know, I was like, oh yeah, some priests abused some kids, but this is not cool. So what's your favorite part of the movie?
One of my favorite parts, one of the actors whose name is Liev Schreiber, he plays a guy called, what was his name?
I don't remember.
Is his name Baron?
Marty Baron.
Who was the lawyer who they thought was bad, but then turned out to be good because he gave him the tip like 20 years ago? What was his name?
The handsome guy?
Yeah.
I don't know.
For some reason I thought his name was Baron, but I think you're right. I think Liev Schreiber is Baron. Liev Schreiber has a great voice. I could listen to him talk forever.
So the lawyer's name was McLeish.
McLeish. That's exactly. You're so right.
Here's another thing. Liev Schreiber has like a very storied acting career and he's really good. And I, for some reason, only remember him as this bit part in the X-Men film.
Which part was he?
The Beast? No, that was Kelsey Grammer.
Wait, what? Kelsey Grammer was an X-Men?
Yeah.
Huh.
He was the Beast.
What? Get out of town.
I know, right? No, Liev Schreiber, he was in like, oh, he was Sabretooth.
I don't remember. He was also in Spider-Verse as Kingpin, as the big guy.
See, that's pretty cool. Anyway, so yeah, Liev Schreiber, great voice.
I thought the acting was good. That's probably my favorite part. But also, like, this story is really good, and it's like great that it's done and it's done so authentically. It's not my thing, but it's like good that it exists, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is a very important film. I really, really love the ins and outs of good journalism. And I think sometimes you'd watch something like this, you'd be like, oh, that was back then. But you really do have to do that weird amount of due diligence. Like if we were if you were doing this story now, you would still have to physically go through all those ex-parishioner books because it's not like anyone digitized that, yeah. You know? That's the diligence of really good reporting. I've had to do very, very, muted versions of that in my career.
You know what?
It's,
you know, yeah. What I don't like? I was thinking maybe I'm dumb, but I feel like I like the show Star Trek The Next Generation. Have you seen that?
I'm aware of it.
Something that's kind of interesting about that show is that the people who made it, they like people in the main characters, they're not going to fight. They're not going to have interpersonal drama. They're not going to blah, blah, blah. They're just going to be like people who are good at their job. And that kind of reminds me of this movie. Like there's not a lot of development. They just kind of, they're experts and they just do their job.
Oh, I've read that. And then all the writers were like, because that's what Gene Roddenberry said to the writers. They're right. Like, that's how you make a show. You can't do that. You can't have no conflict.
I really like The Next Generation. And I think one of the most compelling aspects of that show is they'll often come into a scenario and not know exactly what is they should be doing. They really have to think, well, what is the right choice? And I feel like in this movie, I don't know, they obviously work really, really hard and what they do is really difficult for them. But I don't feel like they ever had to question themselves. I mean, but when Mark Ruffalo does, it's like, can you just get over this part?
Yeah, I think I kind of wonder how they would do this, but I wonder if they could explore more. So a lot of the dumb criticisms of this was like, oh, they're just going after the Catholic Church and saying how great the Boston Globe was. And I thought near the end of the movie, they were making a really good point that a ton of people knew this was going on. And the entirety of like Boston society, like politicians and businessmen and the Boston Globe were complicit in not going after these guys for so long.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a really good point. But did they make that point effectively? Like, or did they just say it?
I think they did. The sticking point for me, and this is kind of wrong because Michael Keaton exhibits this a little bit. I just don't feel like that conflict was exhibited with our main characters, which is fine because it's like that's authentic to the real life. But it's like, for me, the dummy, I like need it. I need like a simple story where characters have arcs or whatever.
I actually kind of agree. Okay, here's where I think they fell down. Is a lot of times throughout the movie, they would have this dialogue where someone would kind of lean on them and be like, the church does so much good for this city. People need the church.
Yeah.
And the movie never demonstrated that. Now, I think it's bullshit, but
yeah.
And I also think it's like, maybe diddling kids, I don't fucking care if you're the best people ever. But yeah, they never once were like, here's an example of the great works of the Catholic Church in the Boston Archdiocese, you know?
Totally. My favorite part, are you going to say something?
No, go for it.
My favorite part of the film is like the end when Michael Keaton reveals that he got the tip from McLeish 20 years ago and he passed it on and is like, yep, see, I was part of the problem. And that shows, you know, an arc for him. And I just felt like the movie, I don't know how you could just make it up, but I felt like the movie needed more of that for me.
Yeah, that's fair. So I think my favorite part, other than like the newsroom stuff, which I thought was just very well done and really cool. So my two real favorite parts are, you mentioned it, but the interviews that they conduct with the survivors are so compelling. That is like the most compelling scenes in the film. When they're talking to these actors about, you know, surviving sexual abuse, and it's
funny. This movie stars like 1,000 famous people, but the stars are these bit people, these bit characters. So I don't know their names, but they're the survivors, and they really brought it. They did the best job of anybody.
They absolutely did. Like, and it was such an authentic performance in that it wasn't hammy in any way. It was just, these are totally believable people who describe what happened to them, and you kind of saw how their lives were ruined by it, and it was amazing.
Yes, and hard to watch,
which I think is why is another point for this movie being very good, that it really makes sure to highlight who the victims are here.
Yeah,
it's not just about how amazing these reporters are. The other thing I liked, which is less serious, is I just really liked the slow play of it. Not to give anything away, but it starts out and there's this one priest who totally did this. And maybe the cardinal knew about it. Whoa, I think there's two. And then like a bit later, it's like, actually, there's as many as 13. Fucking what? 13? And then it's like 90. And it's like, fucking what? Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa. So that, I really like that. Okay, those are all my favorites.
But it is funny. I was just thinking of a moment where this movie was like not a movie to me. And it's the very opening where I didn't really know, you know, I knew the basic premise. But Liev Schreiber, he comes in, he's the new boss. And they're like, all right, boss, what are we gonna do? He's like, there's the story about this priest molesting a bunch of kids. You should do that. And they're like, okay. And that's how it kind of kicks off. And I'm like, if this was Hollywooded up, I felt like it would have been way, I mean, there's a way you could go so far on the other side of the pendulum that is like terrible, but like meet me halfway. You know what I mean?
Totally. I totally get you. All right. I have to say this, and I feel really, really bad about it because it's such a serious movie about such a serious subject. And this has been a problem with our criminal movies, a couple of them, that the Boston accent is very silly.
But no one has a super heavy version.
No, actually, the only real heavy ones are like these really bit on the street characters, like, ah, she moved out like 10 years ago. You know, you got to go down. You see where that car is? You see it?
All right. What's your point? What's your point?
I don't have a point. I just wanted to do the voice.
I have one more small thing to say. I do not like the score very much. I thought it was also...
What was it? I don't even...
Exactly. It was unmemorable. But like Social Network, oh, you got Trent Reznor putting one note on a piano for an hour. It's like,
people,
you remember that.
That. People named my friend David.
People named your brother Michael also like that.
It's like nothing. What is it? Do, 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 right? That's
In Social Network, yeah. It's good. But it's like, it's interesting. And this one, it's not interesting. It's in my opinion.
Here's a summary of the film we talked about. In 1976, at a Boston police station, two policemen discussed the arrest of Catholic priest Father John Gagan. Father is FR. I never knew that. Like, yeah. Mister?
Yeah, that's weird.
Oh, he was arrested for child molestation. A high-ranking cleric talks to the mother of the children. The assistant district attorney then enters the precinct and tells the policeman not to let the press know what happened. Shit.
Mm.
Arrest is hushed up. Priest is released. It's all fine.
Do you have any thoughts about that?
Mm-mm.
I was trying to think. Why do we, in English, why do we write Mr. and Mrs. like shortened like that?
No
but
idea.
Probably just for the self-explanatory reason that you don't want to write so much.
Probably.
You know?
I think it's weird that, like, Mrs. is actually, MRS is actually sort of for mistress.
Really? Mrs. That's where the yeah. R's from?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. See, Sam, that's a fact. All right.
That is a really, really good fact. What am I even doing here?
What?
And Ms., MS, is not short for anything.
What?
It was created in the 70s by feminists to just be a marriage neutral version of Mr.
Go feminists.
I know. I thought we couldn't have fun on the Spotlight podcast. We're doing it.
What's the Kesha song where she goes, Spotlight?
I don't know.
Isn't that a Kesha song?
I'm sure there's a Kesha song that mentions Spotlight.
She says it, but she really pronounces the consonants.
Anyway.
Right. In 2001, the Boston Globe hires a new editor, Marty Baron, played by Liev Schreiber. He's Jewish. That'll probably come up. Baron meets Walter, quote, Robbie Robinson, who's played by Michael Keaton, the editor of the newspaper Spotlight Team, a small group of journalists writing investigative. I like saying investigative like that.
That's very cool.
Investigative articles that take months to research and publish. After Baron reads a Globe column about a lawyer, Mitchell Garabedian, played by Stanley Tucci, who says...
Garabini. Oh, wait. I have another part I don't like about this movie.
What's that?
Is they have so many lines in this about how Garabini is such a character. Like, oh, have you met Mitch Garabini? And then he's just like a normal dude who's good at his job. Like, yeah. What's Stanley Tucci? Why is he so crazy?
Yeah, he seemed,
like, what?
He seemed kind of normal. He should have had a clown tie or something.
Something.
Who says that the Cardinal Bernard Law, the Archbishop of Boston, knew that John Gagan was sexually abusing children and did nothing to stop him. He urges the Spotlight Team to investigate. I mean, he doesn't urge. He just says, like, oh, you should consider it. I'm Liev Schreiber. Journalist Mike Resendez, played by Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo kind of tilts his head a lot. If I was doing it,
that's called acting, Michael.
sorry. He was acting a lot with his head. Contacts Garabian, who initially declines to be interviewed, though he is told not to. Resendez reveals that he's on the Spotlight Team, persuading Garabian to talk.
Whoa. He's like, I'm not supposed to say this, but this is for Spotlight. They say that word a lot in the film.
Our Spotlight teams, they're not real anymore, right? Because journalism's dead.
No, Spotlight still exists for the Boston Globe. This is particularly to the Boston Globe, but investigative teams are not as much a thing as they used to be. Actually, if you really want to know, now there's a lot of ProPublica, so they're non-profit investigative journalism outfits that exist because there's really no commercial drive to make those anymore or to pay people to do it. So does that answer your question?
It did. What was my question even? I don't know.
Initially believing that they are following the story of one priest who was moved around several times, the Spotlight Team began to uncover a pattern of sexual abuse of children by Catholic priests in Massachusetts and an ongoing cover-up by the Boston Archdiocese. This is so weird to bring up, but so I was like 16 when we definitely stopped going to church, so it was 2003-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember around the time that this was breaking, and we had like 3 new priests in just a few years, and it was weird. They were moving people around a lot.
Shuffling.
People, we're talking. They were shuffling.
Oh, that's gross.
Gross.
Did the priest ever talk to us? I don't remember ever talking to a priest in my life.
Yeah, I had to do a confession and stuff.
Did I actually?
I also was a server. So you know, they talked to us when we did that shit.
Oh, they used to be called waitresses. Stupid joke. Sorry.
For those who don't know, a service just like they wear a robe and like candles and hold the book for people. It's weird. Through Phil Savino, who heads the victims' right group, one of the actors who's very, very good, who heads the victims' right group Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP, whose members are interviewed by Sasha Pfeiffer, played by Rachel McAdams, and the team has led their watch search to 13 priests. I thought that guy was so good. There's a line later where he's just so pissed and he's like, you guys are just gonna fucking ignore this again and again. And I'm just like, oh, I felt it.
You felt the anger. And Rachel McAdams is working.
She's just doing her job.
She's like doing her job, but she had the right color back. They learned through Richard Snipe, a former priest who worked at trying to rehabilitate pedophile priests, that according to his experience over decades, 50% of priests are not celibate, though most are in relationship with other adults. He also surprises the journalist that his findings would suggest that their estimate of the numbers of pedophile priests is low and that there should be approximately 90 abusive priests in Boston, because he gives them a 6% number. And that was their calculation.
Yep. I thought that scene was weird because I think that's kind of dumb. Like, I get for like narrative purposes. I mean, I think that's actually what happened. So not for narrative purposes, but if somebody says, well, statistically likely you should have this many, you wouldn't be like, oh, then we'll definitely have 90 priests, you know, because that's just not how statistics work.
Yeah, it is.
Well, 6%. It wouldn't be exact like that.
Well, they didn't expect exact, but it was. They were looking at orders of magnitude, and 13 is a lot lower than 90.
I guess it's just weird that they all reacted like, whoa, that's crazy that they're going to be.
It's a surprising number. You wouldn't react like that?
Well, I wouldn't. I would be like, that's too high, I guess. I don't know.
You'd be like, bullshit.
Bullshit.
The church is important. That's what you would be like.
Well, like, we don't know anything about this guy other than he's ousted with the church.
I feel like you just really like the church. Can you just admit it?
I just love it.
All right.
Their buildings are so pretty.
They do have pretty buildings. Every business should have a building like that.
Yeah.
Get a haircut.
We don't have enough gold filigree in our design anymore.
Is filigree a word? Trump is bringing it back. Good job. Through the research, they developed a list of 87. So you're saying you know statistics. No, in this movie, those are probably the real numbers.
I mean, right. I know. So that was a dumb complaint. Anyway, so September 11th happens.
Hey, I gotta rest the sentence here. And begin to find their victims back up their suspicions. Go ahead. Popcorn.
So September 11th happens. So they have to like put their story on hold for a second.
That was a surprise 9/11. You know what I mean? It was like, oh, 9/11's here.
It's just like that.
Because it's halfway through the film.
Yeah, so not quite like that Pierce Brosnan movie where we're surprised 9/11 at the end.
Yeah.
So they get their momentum back. I loved this court shit. I thought it was so fun. When Mark Ruffalo learns from Stanley Tucci that they're going to court to unseal these documents, the Boston Globe. But Garibee's like, actually, they're already publicly available. And it's all fun court drama that I really like.
What do you like about it?
It was just such fun technical drama. That's why I watched Law and Order for so many years. I love this shit.
You like when people get, haha, I got it.
I'm so smart and technical and I know the system. I love it.
I'm Mark Ruffalo.
Haha. So then later Mark Ruffalo's like, we have the fucking story. Let's run it. Which I did not care about this. He was like real mad about it. And he always wanted to go back to being Catholic. And I'm like,
yeah, when these characters try to be characters, it's like, you're not, this is not that movie, guys.
No. But Robbie, what's his face? Batman.
Batman.
Yeah. He remains steadfast. He's like, no, this is a systematic abuse. It's not just about one priest or 10 priests. This is about the entire system. The hierarchy of the church is the reason that this has gone on for so long. They have embedded these pedophiles and let them go.
I thought Liev Schreiber took the stand on that first, that this is a systematic.
He did. Sorry. But that was Robbie's point building on.
Yeah.
The Jewish editor, which is, I feel, borderline anti-Semitic, how much they brought that up, which I think is the point they were making, but whatever. So after the Boston Globe does actually win the case to have the legal documents unsealed, the Spotlight team finally begins to write their story, and they're going to publish their findings in early 2002. Not during Christmas, because that would just ruin.
Wait, hold on. But wasn't the plot in the movie that, like, oh, we've won the case? Well, that's not actually that great of a thing, because we already have the documents. And so,
no, they only had the most damning documents. They didn't have all the documents.
Oh, okay. So it was good that those were released.
Yes.
I thought they were just worried about other reporters getting those documents. But whatever.
I also thought it was a fun scene where one of the reporters like, this is so great, we won. It's a First Amendment victory. I can't wait to write about it. And they're like, fucking bury it. But I'm not going to tell you why. And I'm like, ooh, intrigue.
As they are about to go to print, Robinson confessed to the team that he was sent a list of 20 pedophile priests by the lawyer Eric McLeish in 1993. Eric McLeish,
hottie,
handsome. Literally, my point.
I have another scene I really liked that's not in this.
Yeah.
So there's a ongoing friendship throughout the movie with so it's established that Michael Keaton is like a guy about town. Like, he knows all the Boston elites. He went to the good high schools and all that. So there's two scenes I really like. One is when he goes back to his old school and they're just like, oh, this is nothing, we wouldn't know. And then the actual principal's like, I would have known if this was at my school. It was like, and then Michael Keaton says, I guess it's lucky we didn't play hockey.
If you say high school with a thick Boston accent, does it sound just like high school?
Yeah, I think so. High school. Play hockey.
I play hockey at high school.
At high school.
Where at high school? That's where it is.
Yeah, I think so. Sorry. But the other thing, so one of his good friends is like a lawyer who is a big deal. But he apparently defended all these priests. And at the end of the movie, he's like, hey, I need a second source. I need you to confirm that these names are correct. This is bigger. Like, this is, and he's like, and then the lawyer, he's like, fuck you, man. You've been a reporter for 40 years. You know what was going on. You didn't say anything. And you know what? I did defend them because that's my job. Because you know what, Michael? Bad guys need to be defended. That's our legal system.
Yeah, it's true.
But then in the end, he comes out and he circles the names. I don't know.
It was good.
I got chills. Chills.
It was snowing. Textual epilogue notes that Cardinal Law resigned in December 2002 and was eventually promoted to the Basilica.
You missed it. Because there was this whole thing.
Oh.
We're talking about hottie Eric McLeish. Oh,
that's, you know, that always gets me distracted. Okay, so Eric McLeish is hot, and he gave Michael Keaton the list of 20 names in 1993. But Barron still commends him and the team's efforts to expose the crimes now. I feel like Leah Schreiber isn't even a good actor. He just kind of says it, but he just has a great voice.
Isn't like, that the same as acting? Is
that not just talking? No, they just as the resonant throat. You know, you don't get Oscars just for throat. But Barron commends him and his team to ever expose the crime. Now, the story goes to print with a web link to the documents that exposes Cardinal. Do you think they really had that meeting at Spotlight where they're like, how are we going to get these documents? Like, oh, well, we'll embed a link.
As somebody who worked at a newspaper in the mid-2000s, I absolutely believe that meeting happened.
Like, oh, the internet is the thing. Okay.
We're going to put the hyperlink at the end of the printed story. I absolutely 100% believe that happened in a
People
meeting.
Are like, how will they know it's clickable? It's like, it'll be blue and underlined. But the story goes to print with the web link to the documents that expose Cardinal Law's inaction and a phone number for a victim of pedophile priest. Following morning, the Spotlight team finds itself inundated with phone calls from victims coming forward to tell their stories.
Michael, way to pronounce inundated correctly. And I think the Kesha lyric you're thinking of is Sunlight.
What's the song?
I've been looking at her lyrics a lot.
I was trying to Google too. I didn't find it.
I think from TikTok.
Yeah, that sounds.
When she goes, I'm going to fight till we see the sunlight.
I think that's totally it too. I only know two Kesha songs. So it's got to be that.
Yeah. It's not in the other Kesha song that you know, Die Young. So
yeah, I love that song. I also know Rainbow off her newer album.
Or Praying. That's a nice song.
I don't know that one.
That's nice.
Anyway, we'll ask John what his Kesha thoughts are. Go ahead.
A textual epilogue notes that Cardinal He resigned in 2002 and was promoted to the Basilica di Santa Maria Maggiore in Rome.
Damn.
Bullshit.
Damn.
Before presenting a list of places in the United States and around the world, including Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where major scandals involving abuse by priests took place. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like people are like, isn't it amazing how this changed the Catholic Church? But it's like, did it? I mean, yeah, it did. But not enough, because I think it should just...
I mean, it did in the sense that, like, if you say the word Catholic Church, people are going to go, oh, priests molesting young boys? Like, it's so affiliated. Right.
Well, I think what's weird about it, so I actually did do some reading about what was the effect of this reporting and then this movie on, and it's like, well, now they actually talk about how this is a problem. And it's like, like, great.
Good job.
Well done. Go you. And they're like, and then there was this whole story about how there's a bunch of nuns and nunneries or things where they were, you know, constantly sexually abused and raped. And then these women felt like they could tell their story too. And I'm like, super. Yeah. Great. Well, so happy.
It's something. It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
Here's what's really not nothing is our next segment where we call our brother John for a segment we call Bro Call.
Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep. Bring, 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 bring.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, John. What do you think of the artist Kesha? John, she doesn't have a dollar sign in her name anymore. It is just K-E-S-H-A.
I think I like the dollar sign. What do you think, John?
Who would you say that is?
She's a artist. I don't know. She does country music now. What do you think?
Not country, okay. Michael.
She has country music. John, what do you think about the movie Spotlight? Have you seen it? What do you think about it?
Right, Spotlight. So it's a movie that I have been meaning to see for forever because it's the sort of thing that probably should appeal to me, but I never bothered to see it just because, you know, I'm like, I know the story. I get it. Whatever.
Why does it appeal to you? I feel like you like history and war. This isn't that.
Well, I mean, it's a historical drama, very facts-based, telling a very
pedantic.
Important story.
You like that.
Pedantic?
Yeah. Like very detail oriented and pedantic.
Yeah,
in the
I do like detail oriented. I've never really associated the word pedantic with that, but yeah, definitely right. Procedural, like all that. But yeah, I just never bothered to see it because I'm like, I get it. They're gonna expose the Catholic Church scandal, and that's gonna be it, and it's gonna be dramatic, and it's gonna be kind of sad.
So
whatever.
Just for people at home. The pedantic is like someone who's too concerned with the literal accuracy or formality. So I think I used that word correctly. I just want that out there.
Huh. Cool.
I
thought of it as a negative connotation around that thing.
Well, it's a negative term that implies someone is showing off book learning or trivia, especially in a tiresome way.
Can I just...
Okay, so I think you're accusing it of being pedantic.
No, you! A sort of pedantic sort of person like you would like a movie like this. Anyway, go on.
You're being mean. It's just, are you being mean to me or the movie? That's the question that's still on the table.
That's
here.
A fun mystery for everybody, John. Go on.
Right. So I never bothered to see it, even though I knew I would want to, until 2 days ago when I came home from work really tired. And I'm like, whatever, I'll just see it because I knew you guys were going to call me about it sometime soon. And I have to say, it's rare that a movie can put me on the edge of my seat. And I was literally on the edge of my seat, hands forward in my face, wow. Leaning forward into the screen. I was so goddamn into that movie.
So it's a John movie. Right?
I knew basically where it was going every step of the way, or at least I thought I did every step of the way, and I was in all the way.
Wow.
I felt the same way when I first watched it, that I was like, oh, I know what this is about, but like, fuck.
Yeah, I do think it's one of those amazing movies that I'm not going to see twice. Like Dunkirk.
Like 8 times.
Dunkirk and 1917 were amazing movies, but I don't think I need to see them again. I feel sort of the same way about this, but I probably will see it again. You're right. Yeah, just I was from like the word go, I was in. I didn't know like half the characters' names even halfway through the movie.
See,
like,
Michael,
they were,
it wasn't just me.
It was me too.
Like, I could get the context of what character they were talking about, like just by the way they were framing it. But like, who is Schneider? Who is I can't even remember names.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I saw 2 days ago. But yeah, I mean, I kind of got it. And I had been told that it wasn't a character-driven movie, so I kind of expected that and rolled with it. But like two-thirds the way through the movie, when they start revealing character twists, that really got to me and like really surprised me. Like, they present Liv Schreiber's character, the publisher, no, editor. And I just kept thinking like he was going to be sort of the bad guy in the beginning, and then he wasn't. And he was like the real crusader, the really soft-spoken guy. He did a fucking amazing job. I shouldn't really use the F word on this, right?
Oh, we swear all the time.
We're explicit. Okay. We have an E now. Fantastic.
He did such a good understated performance. Very powerful. And they kept bringing up his like hostility to the church possible, even though he never acted it. I was really into his character, even though he really didn't bring much to the table. The Billy Crudup lawyer character, his awesome twist with how they were just going after him and going after him, and then he was actually the good guy in the end. That was so good.
Oh, I have a random fact about that. Actually, he did not like the way he was portrayed.
Oh, the real guy.
The lawyer?
But I'm like, but you were so handsome.
Oh, wait, Billy Crudup or the lawyer?
Oh, no, the actual real life lawyer.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, but you were so hot in this movie. Like, I can't understand why you didn't like it.
And such a twist. And such a minor twist, but just lots of little daggers like that. Because the main thing, you knew the story. But all those little daggers just kept hooking me in and in and in. And I was in for the ride.
John, I think this is the first time we agree 100% on a movie.
Love it. And the main twist at the end, which again was a minor twist, but it made so much, is the movie kept presenting that the madman guy was going to be the villain, and like he had been covering for the Catholic Church.
Oh, John Slattery, who played Benjamin Bradley Jr., I believe.
Yeah, that's it. Ben, that character that I actually knew. By the way, was he related to the guy from the Washington Post?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Small world. But yeah, like the movie kept presenting that he had been the one covering for the Catholic Church, and they kept in every scene him questioning things and like kind of half burying it. And then in the end, it was Michael Keaton that buried it. That blew my goddamn mind, and I loved it.
Michael actually made a good point about how it is just a bunch of people who are pretty good at their jobs, and there isn't a lot of internal conflict between them at the paper.
Yeah. But I mean, also at the same token, if this entire movie really grounded and humanized the scandal itself, like the main story, like I get it. I get the Catholic scandal. I get the broad strokes, but the way they presented it and how it takes a community to do this was such a powerful message. And they presented it subtly and so well throughout that it just landed with me so hard, knocked my socks off.
I'm nodding such a so good vigorously right now.
So yeah, before you even ask me, this is an A+. There is nothing I would change about this movie. Wow. It is a masterpiece that I probably won't see again.
Damn.
John, thank you for that. Michael, do you have anything to say about John's opinion?
John, I love your energy and your enthusiasm and your beauty.
The beauty most of all.
The beauty, obviously. That's why I did it.
I appreciate your mane as well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, John. And that was Baroque Call. Michael, what do you grade this film?
I grade it a B. You know, I think it's really good, but it's just not a Michael movie. You know, that's not fair. Enough special effects.
Not enough car chases and explosions.
The Rock, I was looking for him, did not see him.
And you're like, when is Mark Ruffalo gonna get that shirt off?
I know he could be angry. When is he gonna get angry for me? He never did. No, I don't know. It's just the story is really good. And I feel like I feel like my opinion is not important. Like, it's not a Michael movie, but if you're interested, go see it. You know, it's
even if you're mildly interested, I love this film. I'm going to give it an A. I'm only not going to give it an A+ because of what we talked about. Why I don't really think it's best picture. I think this is just such a great film for me.
Yeah.
I loved it so much. I can't give it anything lower than an A, but
yeah, if these were all like programmers making the game that exposed the Catholic Church, that I would like
this
it.
Was my favorite movie of 2015, but I would be amenable to the argument that Mad Max Fury Road should have won Best Picture over it. Even if I didn't like that movie more. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by Nintendo.
Nintendo, if you want to like shoot bad guys and be real cool and have Mario, I guess. It's me, Nintendo. What do they make in the modern era?
I mean, they made Duck Hunt. Remember the gun? Mm-hmm. You remember the gun?
That's the dog.
You could play a modern Nintendo game called Smash Brothers, and one of the characters is the dog and the duck from Duck Hunt.
Shut up!
And you can fight as the dog. So that's pretty cool. So if you're not sold, I mean, you're not human. Anyway,
I once dated a guy who participated in regional Super Smash Brothers tournaments. So
that's cool. I bet that's now he cool plays guy. As the dog. What's our next movie?
Why don't I run the little roster? It's oh my gosh, just in time, but probably 2 weeks late for the 4th of July holiday.
Yeah.
Independence Day.
Oh, fantastic. Will Smith. Fantastic. Yeah. So look forward to the trailer for that movie.
And cut.
Sorry, I think you should listen to this.
This better not be another Depression spy job.
Boy from air traffic red, say the skies are clear.
It's the real thing. Radio signal from another world.
Mr. President,
our intelligence tells us the object assembled into a stationary orbit. Part of it is broken off into nearly 36 other pieces. Smaller than the whole, sir. Yet over 15 miles in width themselves.
Where are they heading?
They should be entering our atmosphere within the next 25 minutes.
Let's just get there as quickly as
possible.
What's
the rush, huh? Think we'll get to Washington and won't be there?
It is confirmed. The unexplained phenomenon is headed for Moscow.
It's like a chess. First, they're positioning the pieces, use this one signal to synchronize their efforts.
And then what?
Checkmate.
God.
I really don't think they flew 90 billion light years to start a fight.
We're gonna stop them! We're gonna kill us all!
Bring back Elvis!
There's gonna be a lot of frightened people out there.
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Something you want to add to this briefing, Captain Hiller?
No, sir. Just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all.